That's so interesting.
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, that is very interesting. Please tell me more.
Very interesting.
Marty, that was very interesting.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to That's So Interesting, the podcast where we discuss what we think are objectively interesting things. I'm Graham, and today we're going to feature a special guest on the show. We have our friend Gabe with us, and Gabe has started a company of his own, Gaber Inc., and it's all about challenging people to be the best that they can be and putting them in a spot to succeed in a way that they define success. So first and foremost, Gabe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm super happy that we were able to make this work because Gabe and I have known each other for a really, really, really long time. We started our relationship through basketball, and that's kind of been the common foundation for kind of growing our relationship. Mm-hmm. But it's been able, and I'm super fortunate, and I'm super happy with where our relationship has gone from there. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, I'll get Gabe to kind of introduce himself.
But I would start with, my name is Gabe Lee. I'm the founder of Gaber Inc. I aim to be one of the defining voices of my generation through being Tony Robbins for high school age students. And my current obsession is to help everyone find what the impact that they would like to leave on the world is and how they can be the best possible version of themselves.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome. So essentially, you're looking to empower people to be a better version of themselves.
Absolutely, because I think both yourself and myself, Brandon, we've been extremely, extremely privileged to have the upbringings that we've had. But for some, and for others, success is dependent on a range of socioeconomic circumstances. So I'm not expecting everyone to reach the heights that that I expect of them. It's about for them to be realistic about their current set of expectations and how they can push just a little bit beyond that, so then they're able to be the best possible version of themselves, not what society expects of them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that ultimately sparked your want to start your company. Like, where that inspiration came from, or like, how did this whole thing start?
Well, for me, growing up, I moved to Canada. We're recording this in Richmond, BC at the moment. I moved to Richmond, British Columbia when I was 7 years old from Corey Bay, Hong Kong. And I had a litany of financial support from my family back in Hong Kong, but there wasn't much emotional support. So one of the things that the Los Angeles Lakers, watching the Los Angeles Lakers play basketball became like my family, and ultimately Kobe Bryant, Oscar winner, 20 years a Laker, he became like a spiritual father figure to me, and much of my psychological makeup is like derived from that. So for the sake of time, I think like ultimately what I want to create is to be a role model and to be who I needed when I was younger, but to really scale that and to monetize it.
Yeah. What were so, in keeping with the Kobe theme, because I know that's such a huge piece of your brand, what's kind of the biggest thing that you want to take from Kobe as an athlete or as a person and invigorate into your business and what you do as a leader?
That's a fantastic question. There's so many things that we can take away from Kobe's career. But I think the biggest thing is like what Mamba mentality means to me is just like the being so relentless and not to allow any circumstances to be a permanent barrier towards what you want to achieve. Like the fact that my favorite moments of his career, I've always been like the micro ones. Like in February, I think 19th of his final season, there was a play where it was his last matchup against the Spurs, and ultimately his last matchup against Tim Duncan. But the Spurs were like 52 and something. Lakers were terrible that year. Mm-hmm. He slips on the floor while he's after a pull up and dislocates his right finger. He goes over to Gary Vee, the Lakers head athletic trainer, asks him to pop it back in. He knows he only has a finite amount of games left. And he checks back in 2 plays later and hits his next jump shot. His mind is so much stronger than 99.9% of his people. And the most famous one that most basketball fans are aware of is when he tears his Achilles in 2013. And most athletes have to be stretchered off or be helped off by a teammate. But he not only walks off on his own will, he makes the 2 free throws that puts the Lakers up 2 points, and the Lakers ultimately win that game by 2 points against the Warriors before succumbing to the nature of the injury.
Yeah, which I think maybe not to the extreme that Kobe has immersed himself in this dedicated mindset, but I think there are elements of that, like perseverance, resilience, drive, dedication to your craft, that are all extremely important things. But I think one of the things that you really help to do is to help young people understand where they need to be focusing those kind of intangible assets that they have, right? And all the energy. Right. And yeah, exactly. Help them to discover what those things are, the importance that they can have in their lives, and then how they can mobilize those things to help them become better versions of themselves.
And also, I guess as a precursor, Brandon and I first met when we both worked at Richmond Youth Basketball League and SummerSlam Basketball.
Shout out to SummerSlam.
Yeah. For providing us the space to record as well. But ultimately, I've seen some of the effects that like people like Brandon, people like myself, and be able to have on young people at the basketball level. But now that Kobe's retired, my love for the game has evolved and isn't quite the same. And I'm now obsessed with having that same effect outside of basketball, because I've seen it work within one ecosystem. It should be the same process, but we're just we're scaling the results.
Okay, so this is go ahead, Graham.
So to dive in, I'm just super interested. So coming from Hong Kong, going outside of basketball, like what specifically attracted you to basketball and you allowed that sort of emotional connection and that, you know, connection with the Mamba mentality to start with? Like, you know, like there are in theory a lot of different social avenues one could go to find that sort of comfort or familiarity that you did. What would you say drew you to, you know, like the LA Lakers?
That's a fantastic question. First and foremost, the Lakers were like the most successful team at the time. So like I was at the time, definitely admittedly a bandwagoner, but like have proved my loyalty over these past 22 years.
That's
but
legit.
In terms of basketball, like I couldn't speak a lick of English for the first 4 years when I was an immigrant here. So what I loved about basketball was like how directly confrontational it was. And how one of my favorite things when I couldn't speak English but I could still participate in basketball was like ripping the ball from someone, or like at half court, and like when the ref goes like jump ball, but like and you still take it away from them, and you just go to the other end for a layup. Like that took out all of my frustration I had of not being able to communicate myself. And I also love when you've mastered a move, and then like no matter what the defender does, like I know I've pulled two dribble pull ups on my right hand side, I'm gonna get to the elbow, it's probably gonna go in, and you just see like the defender's eyes wilt because they've tried their best, but you know that your best is better. And it's things like that, it was extremely measurable in a non-communicative way.
Yeah, I think that's such a great example of how individuals can express themselves in different ways. And I think it's okay to understand that just because, you know, two people may not communicate the same way doesn't mean that they're not communicating, right? And I know one of the things you emphasized to me a long time ago, or re-emphasized to me, was this idea of the five love languages, or the five languages of love.
Absolutely.
Essentially just saying that there are different ways of showing affection and therefore different ways of communicating, which I think is powerful, right? Like some people communicate their affection or their respect to different people through material items.
Yeah.
Some people do it with time. Some people do it with physical interaction. Some people do it with communication and verbal things, right? And for you, basketball acted as a way for you to communicate your emotions and your feelings without having to actually explicitly say things in English.
Yeah, I hope that was a sufficient answer there, Graham.
I love that.
One of the things that I've really come to admire about you is that your path to where you are now was the curviest of lines ever, right? I think some people think that in order to get to where you want to go, and Graham was even just mentioning this before we got on, and like you have to recognize that your path to where you want to go isn't a straight line from A to B, right? There are things along the way that are going to change, and you know, you and I were making reference, like, if to relate this back to basketball, if you're trying to get to the rim to score, mm-hmm. right, you're not going in a straight line towards mm-hmm. the rim, mm-hmm. right? You have your first defender you need to beat, mm-hmm. so you have to make a crossover move or something to beat that defender. Well, now that you beat that defender, there's another defender that comes in and helps. And now you have to make another change of direction moves. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, right, instead of going, you know, you're still trying to get to the rim and score. The end goal is the same, but the way in which you got there was dynamic and fluid and unpredictable.
Absolutely.
And it's the way that Absolutely. You deal with those, you know, defenders coming at you, those bumps along the road
yeah.
that have made you who you are. So Absolutely. Talk to me a little bit about kind of how you got to where you are now.
For sure. I think it's really important. One of the things that I have a performance coach who helps me through to build our business as well, our business together, as well as to help me with a lot of my public speeches that I give to the kids, by the name of Jen Dodswell. One of her mantras that she reminds me of daily is like, we have to be inflexible about our goals, but then we're flexible about how we get there. Varying what Brandon said about the getting past the defender thing. But ultimately, mm-hmm. what has led me to this path is, I think, what I said earlier in the podcast is like a very resounding theme for me. Like, how am I able to be who I needed when I was younger? To not be able to have that much emotional support, but how do I continue to figure things out? And I think from a societal perspective, like as a 26-year-old man sitting here, a lot of people would be expected to do certain things, you know, graduate university, be close, be in a long-term relationship, mortgage, things of that nature. But to me, that doesn't satisfy what my needs were at mm-hmm. an earlier age. Like, I'm so inspired to drive the next generation forward and to pass along everything I've had to almost teach myself, because an idea would, I don't want these things to die with me. Like, how am I able to pass, like, my favorite book of all time is actually The Giver by Lois Lowry. And I truly, truly believe that, like, I've been given this battle to fight and to work my way through not being able to speak English, growing up in isolation, growing up without the emotional support of my family, and having to figure all these things out on my own through the learnings of, like, vicariously living through Kobe Bryant's basketball playing career. Ultimately, I want to tell the kids, like, or any kid who's listening to this, like, if I was able to work my way through that, like, you're able to get out of bed and not be late for class. I think that's what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And how much do you feel like socialization agents or, like, norms, I guess, either that you remember in Hong Kong or, like, growing up in Canada, how much did those, like, influence that sort of pathway? Like, did you ever feel like there were, I guess, external either barriers or supports that have sort of influenced that?
I think it still impacts me to this day. I think from a cultural perspective, I think the Asian Canadian culture is probably the most strictest on academic success, to put things kindly.
Good way to put
so,
it.
So, I mean, to continue that, to have to fight that, or to have fought it over the past X amount of years, and for me to be very transparent with both my immediate family as well as my family in Hong Kong, that, like, building this business could take years before we reach the levels that being an accountant or being a lawyer could have reached already. But I truly, truly want my life to be an example to the next generation, that we are living in a way that fulfills you. And I'm here to build a blueprint to a house that I can live in and be content with forever, as opposed to pitching a temporary tent in which I will ultimately not be satisfied with my life. It's like one of my signature hashtags, if you guys follow me on Instagram, like, I'm sure I'll be in the show notes later, is hashtag Monday is the new Friday. I feel like in Western, the social construct of Western society mm-hmm. is like, we're always looking towards the next vacation. We're always looking forward to Friday night. But if you're able to design a life in the same way that, like, Kobe and I continue to design our lives, every day is Friday. It's like every single day that you get an opportunity to wake up and, like, pursue your passion, that's Friday.
right, Friday in the sense that it's going to be a great day.
I love that.
Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm looking forward to this because it means that good things are coming mm-hmm. next, mm-hmm. right? And to, yeah, and to kind of
something
reframe the
out.
Way that you see your life and you see the things that you experience. Mm-hmm. I think that's so powerful.
You guys are better at math than I am, but like whatever the weekend is, what is that? Like Friday night plus 2 days a week, that's probably like 23% of the week. But if you live for Monday, then you get 100. You get 100.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I can't argue with the numbers.
Yeah, not that we're huge analytics based.
Yeah. Shout out Sam Hinkie.
Yeah, we're not huge on evidence based inquiry here, but you know, damn, does that sound good?
Well, I want to come back to Gabe Ring, but switching gears a little bit.
Yeah.
Sticking with the Laker theme, mm-hmm. you're going on a almost once in a lifetime pilgrimage.
I was going to use that exact word, pilgrimage.
On Christmas Day, mm-hmm. so people who know the basketball world well. Know that Christmas Day in the NBA is a very, very big deal. And it's kind of the one day where, you know, obviously families are celebrating the holidays and being together, mm-hmm. but the NBA has kind of marketed Christmas Day to kind of take over the home life and sporting life. There's nothing really else going on in the sports yeah. world other than the basketball. You know, back-to-back five marquee matchups.
Yeah.
Big games, and for the first time ever, you're going to get to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely, absolutely incredible, and I love that you phrased it as a pilgrimage, Brandon. The fact that I'll be flying down to the Oracle Arena or to the Bay Area on Christmas Eve to take in the Lakers, Los Angeles Lakers, visiting the Golden State Warriors on Christmas Day, and to be that to get to channel that kid from Corey Bay, Hong Kong, one more time. And as you guys have heard earlier in the podcast, like the Lakers were my family, and to like spend that, but it feels more like distant family now that Kobe has left the team. But when I need that little extra nitrous, I still know that at 7:30, three times a week, I can turn the Laker game on. And I can find what I need, that sense of tribalism that I needed to channel earlier in my life.
Yeah.
But 18 straight Christmas Day games on TV in year 19, you know, in the, speaking of societal constructs, like year 19 is usually when people turn to an adult. So I phrased it, I thought to quote Drake and Lil Wayne, YOLO, you do this thing one time. And with Gaber Inc. and many other projects on the horizon in terms of my personal and professional development, I think it'd be a good time to stow that part of my life away, and I feel like to achieve that piece of closure through being there in person is going to be extremely, extremely powerful on Christmas Day.
Yeah, because you've been to a lot of Laker games, uh-huh. But this will be obviously the first one on Christmas Day, and I think the first one, you and I were talking about this before, like I think the first one in a really long time that the Lakers aren't playing at Staples Center
yeah.
in LA on Christmas Day, like. Yeah. The Warriors have their brand is maybe bigger than that of the Lakers
yeah.
in the 21st century. And they've, yeah. I don't know, the schedule makers have given them the home court yeah. advantage. But, man, I'm so jealous because, like, Oracle Arena, where the Warriors play, is known to be one of the greatest sporting environments that there is.
Yeah.
And I feel like on Christmas Day, it's going to be, like, that times 1,000.
Yeah.
Plus, with the Lakers being in town, like, I'm sure there will be enough, you know, obviously there will be Golden State fans, but there's probably going to be just as many Lakers fans because LA yeah. is so close
yeah.
to Oakland.
Yeah.
I think that, man, I'm so jealous because I think as a sporting experience, like, I'm not sure if there will be many other experiences that can come close to that, right?
Mm-hmm. And, sorry, go ahead, Graham.
I was just going to say, like, you took the words out of my mouth, too. I was crunching the numbers, and I was noticing how, like, yeah, 19 years, like, this is a total
yeah.
coming of age thing too, so to speak, and I just, you know, I just love how sometimes that stuff just works out, because I and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd imagine it wasn't necessarily your intention to wait for the 19th year until you
yeah.
had this experience, but
Found
everything
place.
Is lining up and you know
yeah,
coming
exactly,
up Gabe.
exactly, and what a year it's going to be.
Yeah.
You brought up the notion of $100. If you had $100 to spend or to bet, you would put 75 and 25. Mm. You kind of introduced this concept to me last year when we were having another conversation.
Yeah.
And you were using $100 as an analogy to the time you spend in a day. So kind of going back to our conversation about Gabe Rink, explain that analogy a little bit more to me and maybe introduce it to Graham and kind of how you integrate it in your life. Mm-hmm.
So this is another Jen Dowdswell concept that she has really entrenched upon me outside of being flexible about how we get to our goals. She believes that it's one of the major things about building a company is that for the most part, I still have to work I have to work a certain amount of hours in order to feed myself and to support and to fund the company. So I was getting extremely, extremely tired at certain points throughout the day. And to also have enough energy to go from my job at the City of Richmond towards content creating at Gabe Rink was a huge hurdle for me because I just wasn't used to that bandwidth of work. So she introduced me to the idea. She told me to close my eyes for a sec and to imagine any strip or any long road that I would like. She had me open my hand, handed me $100, and told me to go walk down the strip and to hand it out to as many or as little people as I would like, and also to answer her how I would distribute this money. And the synthesis and the learning from this analogy was that the $100 is actually how you choose to distribute your time and energy throughout the day. Oh, there's also another caveat I forgot to mention. Like the $100 has to be spent. You can't save any for yourself, but you do get.
I was going
to
ask.
Or else we would all just keep it, right?
You can't keep it. You can't give out 90. Keep 10 to buy lunch.
Just reinvest that, man. Just
which is
reinvest.
Actually,
it.
My answer, which I gave her, I would during that first sitting when she introduced that concept to me, I told her I would get to know as many people's stories as possible, and then find the people who would reinvest that money and to make more of that $10 to $15 out and multiply that, which is ultimately. And that, which is ultimately pretty similar to what my macro trajectory of the vision of Gabe Rink, to find these people that I can help better and as well as for them to find that passion and to maximize their passion so they can also in turn inspire others.
Yeah. So I think, like you're kind of mentioning, and this kind of brings up another segue that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. But essentially it's the idea of, you know, how am I going to dedicate my time today?
Yep.
And I think the notion of $100, not that it represents a lot. I think what it really represents is it's limited. Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite a small sum. And the idea that you really only have 24 hours in a day, how are you going to best allocate those mm-hmm. hours and minutes and seconds to be most productive or to get the most out of it kind of thing? One of the things that fascinates me and really inspires me about your life is you're regimented. I don't want to say regimented because I think it puts a negative connotation on it, but like your daily schedule and the way that you're able to kind of operate every single day mm-hmm. with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And you've almost got your routine kind of down to a science. So mm-hmm. kind of walk me through, and I want to know like the hours in the day, because like I know you kind of have that timed up, but like kind of walk me through an average day in the life of Gabe, because I think a lot of people might find it interesting to know what goes on in your mind and like how you prepare yourself every single day to go out and do the best that you can do.
For sure. So this was something that Kobe taught me too. If you train more than everyone else, to have the privilege to train 3-4 times a day and to give your body enough time to recover, that means waking up earlier than everyone else. So part of the Mamba mentality, which I've directly incorporated, is I wake up at 4 o'clock Monday through Saturday, with Sunday being a rest day. And then from 4 o'clock, Michael Gervais, the sports psychologist of the Seattle Seahawks, says there's 3 things that we can train in this world. And I try to knock all 3 out before I go to my City of Richmond job. So he says that you can train your craft, you can train your body, and you can also train your mind. So the first thing I do in the morning is I hop straight into a 10 to 15 minute meditation to center my day. Shout out to the Calm app on the iPhone. Huge app. And then from there, I hopped straight from my meditation process. And what I was thinking, what was the most pertinent thought during that sit, I go into journaling, which would be my craft, because I used to go to journalism school at Ryerson. I consider that part of my craft, and writing was a huge thing for me. Then I'll make my foray into Pure Barre fitness class in Kitsilano.
Shout out Lee Ellis.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we finish show. Off that triumvirate of things we can train through a 50-minute high-intensity but low-impact workout at the Healthiest Addiction in the Lower Mainland. So that's the first part of my day. Do you guys want to kind of unpack that before I...
Yeah, so it? Like... So by the time you finish your class, what time is it?
6:50
So by 7 o'clock... From 4 to 7 o'clock, you checked off all of those three things. Yeah. When most of us are still asleep. Like, I know Graham is an up early guy, but I don't know if you quite reached the 4 a.m. mark.
Yeah. I don't know. 5 o'clock is usually my hour. And so, like, it's – I think I'm really impressed by that sort of routine. And I've been aware of that sort of, you know, routine. I think I've even heard it from a similar source and that sort of thing. But to have the commitment to regularly, you know, do that and actually adopt that through your identity and, you know, obviously have people recognize you for it. Like, so now Brandon knows, like, oh, Gabe is yeah. for it to start his day. You know, but that's something really neat because then there's the whole confirmation of your identity, which – I don't know if, Gabe, you would say that this would be an influencer, but I know for me, with something like running. So I still run for just personal benefit. I rarely compete in races anymore. But I would say there's still the perception of my identity that, oh, there's Graham, the runner. Graham runs. Yeah. Running is a thing that Graham does. And that sort of reaffirms for me, like, oh, well, shit, I got to go for a run. People think I run. Like, this is, you know. So now it's sort of become a thing where I do it, not extrinsically motivated, but it helps me stay in line with something that I value. So would you say that, I guess, like, facing that routine outwards, like, so people know about, you know, your morning routine, say, or something like that, your lifestyle, is that something that has allowed you to reaffirm that routine and renew a stronger sense of commitment to it? Or do you feel any sort of influence or pressure from that?
In all honesty, no. It's not something that I truly publicize to people. It's the first time that I've expressed it from, like, top to bottom those first 3 hours of my day. It's more for a personal benefit than anything else, I think. Like, because of my obsessive personality, which I've developed through learning and organizing basketball, one of the things that always strikes me, and, like, I have a lot of difficulties with even as an adult, is, like, when there's something left to accomplish, my mind is so fixated on that thing. But if I wake up this darn early and then I check those three things off, mind, body, craft, then I'm at peace by the time I arrive at work at 8:30 or 8:24. Shout out to Kobe. But whereas if I miss one of those, it's more for, like, my mental sanity and my mental health. If I miss one of those things, then my mind begins to tick and wander throughout the day and be like, well, you haven't done this yet there. And to be so centered throughout the day and be so laser-like focused, it first requires me to check those things off. So it's not about others. It's more about myself, because the rest of my day is about others due to the nature of Gabe Inc. and the nature of my personality of wanting to be extremely giving, and to much like Lonzo celebrates that pass to JaVale more than him scoring himself.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think you raise a really interesting point too, just with that routine. Like, I'm fairly routine focused as well, not obviously in necessarily a comparable way, but what is the impact for you, if any, and maybe there isn't, when that morning routine isn't completed in the way in which you would normally intend it to be? Do you feel like, I know you were mentioning, like, it's sort of sitting in your mind. Is that something that bothers you when you can't do that, and therefore, like, you feel unsuccessful in that moment? Or how does that sort of play out for you?
So a big part of my story is also, like, to have fought and to overcome a lot of depression and anxiety. I've logged over 200 hours in therapy with a team of over six different psychologists throughout my life, since from, like, 18 to now. Mm-hmm. And they've provided me with the necessary skill sets and the toolkit in order to navigate through some of these things. So say I miss a workout now, it's about having such a high threshold of self-compassion where I know I'm going to be able to crush that workout later. But also at the same time, I haven't felt that way in a long time because I'm so determined to not feel this way that no matter what happens when that alarm goes out at 3:45, I value being in a good headspace over sleeping in for another hour, because that's the level of excellence and that's the level of determination I want people to see of me by the time that they see me in public for the first time.
Yeah, one of the
I love that. And so well, I think sorry, the, oh sorry, Brandon.
Just I think add to the depth of your schedule, just like briefly. How long have you been structuring your days like this? Because I think what's important to note is that this isn't something that, this isn't like some sort of New Year's resolution that you've been doing for a week.
Yeah.
Like, I think what's so inspiring about you is that you've been doing this for probably as long as I've known you.
Yeah. So since like, I would say consistently, probably 2 or 3 years.
To me, that shows that and that alone, that you've dedicated yourself for that long to this way of living means that you truly, truly care about what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think that means so much because a lot of times people will try and make, to steal a term from you, life edits, mm-hmm. right? Where they try and make edits to better themselves in life, but don't have that internal resolve. For a number of reasons, either they aren't inspired mm-hmm. or they haven't found the right reasons mm-hmm. to, kind of fuel their drive to stick to it. But I think one of the things that makes you so inspiring is that, you've kind of found that inner resolve and that drive and all those intrinsic factors that motivate you to keep doing this every single day and keep going. And I remember
appreciate that.
One of the things that you mentioned to me a couple of years ago about your routine is that you wanted to build it in. And again, using another basketball analogy, mm-hmm. You work front desk at West Richard Community Center. Mm-hmm. So a large part of that job is interacting with everyday people, everyday community members, mm-hmm. anyone who comes in to use the facilities, mm-hmm. walk through, whether they're working out or whatever. And one of the things you said to me was that part of your routine in the morning before getting to work was ensuring that you always had some sort of warm-up social interaction.
Yeah.
So it used to be going to, I remember you said you used to go to McDonald's, have your coffee, interact with the crew at McDonald's and the other patrons who visited there at the same time.
Yeah.
I think now that's kind of evolved into your bar class.
Absolutely.
And all the other fitness classes that you do in the morning with the purpose of treating your job like a game, like it matters. Mm-hmm. And the analogy you used that was you didn't want your first rep to be in a game,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you didn't mm-hmm. want that first shot to be in the game. You want it to warm up. So in a way you're doubling down on your dedication because you care about your front desk job.
Right.
You care about doing things to the best of your abilities. And so you prepare yourself in a way, and that preparation is so key because I think a lot of people, if it's the first thing on their schedule, they kind of just show up and do it. And they allow themselves time in the morning while doing their first task to wake up. Right. So if it's going to class, if it's an early class, they're like, okay, well, the first 30 minutes is a wash because I'm waking up in the first 30 minutes. Right. But the way you approach it is that's a commitment to yourself. Mm-hmm. And you would never allow yourself to, quote unquote, waste that time by warming yourself up. Right. Like when you're there, you're in the room, you're present, you're attentive, you're focused, you're paying attention because you understand the importance that it has, and also the respect piece, right? Like you're going to respect their time. If you're going to interact with somebody, you're respecting their time being there. You want to give them your best self because you care. And I think it kind of shows that regardless of where you are, mm-hmm. If you're able to find a situation in which you truly care, and I know, we've talked about this and we'll talk about it a little bit later as you move forward with Gabe Rink, but like you're, intentions were never to be at the front desk your whole life, mm-hmm. right? This was kind of an opportunity for you to learn new things.
Yeah.
not to call it a stepping stone, but a just different chapter in your life.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people find themselves in those situations where they're like, oh, you know, I'm only working at McDonald's for 2 years till I can save up, and I don't really treat it, you know, I don't really like it. And I'm not, you know, but I think the way you approach it is not about the job. You approach it as a way that, you know, this is an opportunity that I've had, you know, that I've been given. I'm grateful for the opportunity, and I want to make the most of it. And I want to do the very best that I can do. And I've just really appreciated and admired that kind of approach to life that you've taken.
So much, man.
I meant for that to be a shorter tangent. I didn't realize that would be that long, but
that means forever.
Yeah, I think it Mamba just mentality. Speaks volumes to the way you prepare your life. And I've always tried to kind of take bits and pieces from the way that you go about your day and trying to model, you know, the things that I do. So, you know, if I am going to class and I'm always trying to be up at least 2 or 2.5 hours before I need to go, and I'm preparing myself, I'm making sure that my whole day is preppy the night before or in the morning. And, you know, if it's before a game, I'm always reviewing, I'm always kind of engaging with the content, because I think preparedness is so key. And we've talked about this on the show before, you know, how I feel about being prepared. I think always being prepared is so important. But I think the way you've gone and done it with your life is almost taking it to that next level, which I think is incredible. So sorry, Graham, I know I cut you off like 15 minutes ago. So
that's okay. I don't remember what I was going to say.
And I really, really thank you for
it was a really good point, though, Brandon.
Sharing that. For someone to, it's for one thing to live it, but to take a step back and be like, wow, that's what I'm doing, and to be recognized by one of my best friends for that is an incredible, incredible situation to be put in.
Which, to go back on Graham's point, like, I know you mentioned that you don't share that kind of aspect of your life outwardly.
Yeah.
But just given the effect that it's had on me, it could serve other people well to know that anybody can go and live that kind of life. Like, you're not special as a human being with the powers to wake up at 4. Graham is not a special human being with the powers to wake up at 5. You've framed your lives in ways that have allowed you to see things that are important to you and have given you the motivation and drive and fire and want to go and do these things. And it makes it easy, right? Like, I think a lot of people see waking up early as a chore, right? And you see it as an opportunity.
It's a choice. And but what I would for any person listening to this, I would say, if you ask me why or how I'm doing it, it's less about the act. It's the physical act of waking up. It's about being excited about your life, and part of that is to how are you going to make your purpose bigger than I'm going to work at McDonald's. I'm going to go to school. Start thinking like 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the line. Like, what's that one thing that's going to be like? For me, it's my, for Gaborink, I eventually want to have a 20-city stadium world tour that culminates at Staples Center with Kobe Bryant introducing me to the stadium that he popularized. And that one thing, because I know I have to work towards that, or I will work towards that, that's going to continue to drive me to continue to wake up at this time and to have to hash out and to complete the litany of tasks on my to-do list.
Yeah.
But part of why I think like people don't give them enough incentive to work their way through that process. So I think two parts. One is expand your why you're doing something to give yourself more meaning, more validation. And then two is that motivation has to come intrinsically. If someone is waking you up at that time, that's not going to be sustainable. But if that's a choice and not a chore, like Brandon phrased earlier, or that we collaborated on phrasing, then you will forever be dedicated to yourself, because self-compassion is a thing, self-work is a thing, and to be so obsessed and loving your life, like, it continues to be about Monday being the new Friday.
Yeah. So in kind of rethinking about Gaborink, what if you could, you know, we did an episode on like edge of the bed advice, so framing yourself in, you know, being an elderly individual with your grandchildren or young individuals coming and kind of sitting on the edge of your bed, and you're imparting wisdom onto them. So I think the one thing that a lot of people struggle with is finding that thing that gets them going.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think you would agree that once you have the goal, everything is kind of easy from a motivation standpoint because you're just that, you're motivated to do it. But how do you go about finding your goal, because a lot of people might say, I don't really know what I want to do with my life, which is, I think, a valid point. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that affects the way you can operate. Like, just because you don't know what you want to do doesn't mean you're indifferent. And, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to start trying until you figure what that thing is. Because, you know, earlier on, you still had this mentality about the way you lived your life, but you were in journalism.
Yeah.
I think Gaber Inc. was never even, maybe it was only a conception of an idea.
Yeah.
Right? In between journalism, you were running Ribble. SummerSlam and Ribble and Rich Meek Basketball League. Yeah. Right? And before Gaber Inc. was even a thing, but you still kind of operated with the same motivation to do what you do. So how do people get to that point?
Same mindset, I think. To modify Mamba mentality there, and to be, you can't really go from 0 to 100, but you're able to go from 100 to 80. And what I mean by that is, when you love the work, and you love to work towards something, in my case, when you love to be obsessive, everything else becomes transferable. Whatever the discipline is, if you're consistent in your practices towards something, then you're always able to leverage that into other disciplines. But you can't go the reverse. You can't be like, I'm going to work really hard in biology class because it comes naturally to me, but I'm just going to chill in drama class because that's not a thing. To me, even if I'm not good at drama, I'm going to give the best I can, because that trains my brain for challenge. And it's so hard for me to live a life that's inconsistent due to a litany of reasons, but I think that would be my edge of the bed advice, to develop impenetrable habits where even after the motivation goes away, your mind and your body is still used to this threshold of excellence that you've set for yourself.
All right, guys, so we really enjoyed our conversation with Gabe, and there's definitely a lot more to talk about. We actually had so much to talk about with Gabe, we decided to split this up into 2 episodes. So this is going to be part one, this is going to be the end of part one, and then next week we're going to release part two with Gabe. So stay tuned, enjoy, we hope you enjoyed this one. And remember, as always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always get in touch with us via email at thatsointerestingpod@gmail.com, as well as get in touch with us on Instagram at @TSIPodcast. Again, we have a lot of fun creating these episodes, and we recognize that there's a lot of podcasts out there, so we appreciate you guys listening to ours. As always, get out there and play, kids.